It should be known that many people reach and enter the first wine cellars, each according to the perfection of his love. But few in this life reach this last and most interior, for in it is wrought the perfect union with God, called spiritual marriage, of which the soul is now speaking. What God communicates to the soul in this intimate union is totally beyond words. One can say nothing about it, just as one can say nothing about God Himself that resembles Him. For in the transformation of the soul in God, it is God who communicates Himself with admirable glory. In this transformation, the two become one, as we would say of the window united with the ray of sunlight, or the coal with the fire, or of the starlight with the light of the sun. But this union is not as essential and perfect as in the next life. Thus, to explain what she receives from God in the interior cellar of union, the soul says nothing else, neither do I think she can say anything more adequate than the following verse: I drank of my beloved. As the drink is diffused through all the members and the veins of the body, so this communication is diffused substantially in the whole soul. Or better, the soul is transformed in God. In this transformation, she drinks of God in her substance and in her spiritual faculties. With the intellect, she drinks wisdom and knowledge. With the will, the sweetest love, and with the memory, she drinks refreshment and delight in the remembrance and the feeling of glory. As for the first, that the soul receives and drinks delight substantially, the bride speaks of it in the canticle. My soul delighted as soon as the bridegroom spoke. Canticle 5:6. This speaking of the bridegroom is equivalent to God's communication of Himself to the soul. In the same book, the bride says that the intellect drinks wisdom. When in desiring to attain this kiss of union and seeking it from the bridegroom, she said, "There you will teach me." Wisdom and knowledge and love. And I shall give you a drink of spiced wine, my love, spiced with yours, transformed in yours. Canticle 8:2. Regarding the third, the will drinks love, as the bride says in the canticle. He put me in the secret wine cellar and set in order charity in me. Canticle 2:4. The meaning is that when I was put in his love, he gave me love to drink, or more clearly or properly speaking, he put his charity in order in me, accommodating and appropriating his own charity to me. Hence the soul drinks of the beloved's very own love, which he infuses in her. It should be known that the teaching of some about the will's inability to love what the intellect does not know first know ought to be understood naturally. Naturally, it is impossible to love without first understanding what is loved, but supernaturally, God can easily infuse and increase love without the infusion or increase of particular knowledge. This is the experience of many spiritual persons. They frequently feel they are burning in love of God, with no more particular knowledge than before. They understand little, but love a great deal, or understand a great deal, but love little. As a matter of fact, those spiritual persons whose understanding of God is not very advanced usually make progress according to their wills, while infused faith suffices for their knowledge. By means of this faith, God infuses charity in them and augments this charity and its act, which means greater love. Although, as we said, their knowledge is not increased. Thus, the will can drink love without the intellect again drinking knowledge, although in our case, in which the soul says she drank of her beloved, all the three faculties drink together, insofar as there is union in the inner wine cellar. As to the fourth, in which the memory drinks of the beloved, it is clear that the memory is illuminated by the intellectual light in remembrance of the goods the soul possesses and enjoys in the union with her beloved. This divine drink so defies, elevates, and immerses her in God that she says, "And when I went abroad," that is, when this favor had passed. For even though the soul is always in the sublime state of spiritual marriage, once God has placed her in it, the faculties are not always in actual union, although the substance is. Yet in this substantial union of the soul, the faculties are frequently united too, and they drink in this inner wine cellar, the intellect understanding, the will loving. But in saying, "When I went abroad," she does not refer to the essential or substantial union, which is this state she already has, but to the union of the faculties, which is not, nor can be, continuous in this life. "And when I went abroad, then, through all this valley," that is, through this vast world, "I no longer knew anything." The reason is that the drink of the highest wisdom makes her forget all worldly things, and it seems that her previous knowledge, or even all the knowledge of the world, in comparison with this knowledge, is pure ignorance. For a better understanding of this, it should be known that the most formal cause of the soul's knowing nothing of the world, when in this state, is that she is being informed with supernatural knowledge, in the presence of which all natural and political knowledge of the world is ignorance rather than knowledge. When the soul is brought into this lofty knowing, she understands by means of it that all other knowledge, which has not the taste of this knowledge, is not knowledge, but ignorance, and that there is nothing to know in it. She declares the truth of the apostles' words, that what is greater wisdom in the sight of men is foolishness before God. 1 Corinthians 3:19. Hence she asserts that she no longer knew anything after drinking of that divine wisdom. And this truth, that the wisdom of men and of the whole world is pure ignorance and unworthy of being known, cannot be understood except by this favor of God's presence in the soul, by which he communicates his wisdom and comforts her with the drink of love, that she may behold this truth clearly, as Solomon explains. This is the vision that the man who is with God saw and spoke, and being comforted by God's dwelling within him, he said, "I am the most foolish of men, and the wisdom of men is not with me." Proverbs chapter 30, verse 1 to 2. The reason is that in the excess of the lofty wisdom of God, the lowly wisdom of men is ignorance. The natural sciences themselves and the very works of God, when set beside what it is to know God, are like ignorance. For where God is unknown, nothing is known. The high things of God are foolishness and madness to man, as St. Paul also says, 1 Corinthians 2:14. Hence the wise men of God and the wise men of the world are foolish in the eyes of each other. For the one group finds the wisdom and knowledge of God imperceptible, and the other finds the same of the knowledge of the world. Wherefore, the knowledge of the world is ignorance to the knowledge of God, and the knowledge of God is ignorance to the divine knowledge of the world. On the other hand, that elevation and immersion of the mind in God, in which the soul is as though carried away and absorbed in love, entirely transformed in God, does not allow attention to any worldly thing. She is not only annihilated before and estranged from all things, but even from herself, as if she had vanished and been dissolved in love, all of which consists in passing out of self to the Beloved. Thus the bride in the canticle, after having treated of the transformation of her love into the Beloved, refers to this unknowing in which she was left by the word, "I did not know." Canticle 6:11. In a way, the soul in this state resembles Adam in the state of innocence, who did not know evil, for she is so innocent that she does not understand evil, nor does she judge anything in a bad light. She will hear very evil things and see them with her own eyes, and be unable to understand that they are so, since she does not have within herself the habit of evil by which to judge them. For God, by means of the perfect habit of true wisdom, has destroyed her habitual imperfections and ignorances, which include the evil of sin. And so too, in regard to her words, "I no longer knew anything," she takes little part in the affairs of others, for she is not even mindful of her own. This is a characteristic of God's Spirit in the soul. He gives her an immediate inclination toward ignoring and not desiring knowledge of the affairs of others, especially that which brings her no benefit. God's Spirit is turned toward the soul to draw her away from external affairs rather than involve her in them. Thus she remains in an unknowing in the manner she was accustomed to. It should not be thought that because she remains in this unknowing that she loses there her acquired knowledge of the sciences. Rather, these habits are perfected by the more perfect habit of supernatural knowledge infused in her. Yet these habits do not reign in such a way that she must use them in order to know, though at times she may still use them, as this supernatural knowledge does not impede their use. For in this union with divine wisdom, these habits are joined to the superior wisdom of God. When a faint light is mingled with the bright one, the bright light prevails, and is that which illumines. Yet the faint light is not lost, but rather perfected, even though it is not the light which illumines principally. Such, I believe, will be the case in heaven. The habits of the acquired knowledge of the just will not be supplanted, but they will not be of great benefit either, since the just will have more knowledge through the divine wisdom than through these habits. Yet particular knowledge, forms of things, imaginative acts, and any other apprehensions involving form and figure are all lost and ignored in that absorption of love. There are two reasons for this. First, since the soul is absorbed and imbibed in that drink of love, she cannot advert actually to any other thing. Second, and principally, that transformation in God makes her so consonant with the simplicity and purity of God, in which there is no form or imaginative figure, that it leaves her clean, pure, and empty of all forms and figures, purged and radiant in simple contemplation. The effect of this contemplation is like that of the sun on a window. In shining upon the window, the sun makes it look bright, and all the stains and the smudges previously apparent are lost sight of. Yet when the sunlight passes, the stains and the smudges reappear. Since the effect of that act of love endures a while, the unknowing also continues, so that the soul cannot advert to anything in particular until the effect of that act of love passes. Since that act of love inflamed and transformed her into love, it annihilated her and did away with all that was not love, and is understood in what we mentioned above concerning David. Because my heart was inflamed, my reins were also changed, and I was brought to nothing and knew not. Psalm 72. The change of the reins because of this inflammation of the heart is a change of the soul according to her operations and appetites into God, into a new kind of life in which she is undone and annihilated before all the old things she formerly made use of. The prophet thus says that he was brought to nothing and did not know, for these are the two effects we mentioned of this drink from the wine cellar of God. Not only is all her old knowing annihilated, seeming to her to be nothing, but her old life and imperfections are annihilated, and she is restored to the new man, which is the second effect contained in this verse. And lost the herd which I was following. It should be known that however spiritual a soul may be, there it always remains, until she reaches this state of perfection, some little herd of appetites, satisfactions, and other imperfections, natural or spiritual, after which she follows, in an effort to pasture and satisfy it. In the intellect there usually reside some imperfect appetites for knowing things. The will is usually allowed to be captivated by some small appetites and gratifications of its own. These may involve temporal things, such as some little possession, or the attachment of one object more than another, or some presumptions, judgments, punctualios, and other small things having a worldly savor, a tinge. These later may concern natural things, such as eating, drinking, finding more gratification in this than in that, choosing and desiring the best. Or they may concern spiritual things, such as the desire for spiritual satisfactions or other trifles we would never finish listing, characteristic of spiritual persons who are not yet perfect. In the memory, there are usually many wanderings, cares, and useless imaginings after which she follows. Regarding to the four passions of the soul, there are many useless hopes, joys, sorrows, and fears which she follows. Some have more and others less of this herd. They follow until, having entered the interior wine cellar to drink, all transformed in love, they lose it entirely. In this wine cellar, these herds of imperfections are more easily consumed than the rust and tarnish of metal is consumed by fire. Thus the soul now feels free of all the childish likes and trifles which she pursued, and can say, and lost the herd which I was following.